The start of a new year is always significant because not only have we got new year resolutions to look to, we've also got great new audio postcards to bring to the listeners of Siren Radio and beyond. And accordingly, we find ourselves this week at the London Boat Show, powered by British Marine, leading the industry. It's an event that's running from the 10th of January to the 14th of January. And all being well, if you're listening to this live on Siren Radio on a Thursday evening, you'll be able to hear some samples of the audio postcards that we're bringing to you. Who are the we, you might well say? Well, we've got Ed Wellman with us. Yay, Ed.
Hello, Alex. Good to be here again. I think this is the third year running, isn't it?
I think we missed one a couple of years ago, but we've been pretty much regular over the last 5 or 6 years. I think this is the 60th or thereabouts overall. Details to come, obviously, from Amy Stone, who's going to be another new voice we'll be hearing from in the not-too-distant future. Amy, of course, one of the fine folk for On Broadcast, and already they've set up an interview with us with two brothers who are raised in Africa, and they're on a mission to support the indigenous cultures of Kenya through luxury fashion. That's Koi Clothing, which I suppose indicates that actually there's more than just boats at the London Boat Show, although it would seem that this year they've gone for boats, and boats.
Yes, so says the welcome from the British Marine President, David Poa, who said, yes, indeed, this year it's boats. And David interestingly saying that a quarter of the exhibitors this year are new, so there'll be some new people to talk to.
I gather that Her Royal Highness Princess Anne is appearing somewhere along the way today. I think Sir Geoff Hurst is due to actually be doing the Sunseeker launch. It doesn't seem to appear in the official programme, but there's also a footballing theme. We will, over the next 3,000-odd seconds, be hopefully bringing you some samples of the London Boat Show, also assisted by our very capable director extraordinaire, BAFTA Award winner, the one and only Graham Harper.
If you're coming, allow an extra 3 hours to come through Cambridgeshire. That's just saying.
That's if you're travelling by car, of course. Just a minor update there. And who knows, by the time you listen to this on a Thursday evening, or even as a podcast, it might well all have changed for the better. Well, we did say earlier we might be speaking to the awesome Amy Stone from On Broadcast, but no, she sent a duly deputised designated deputy. That would be the amazing Charlotte to us. How are you, Charlotte?
Good, thank you.
Last year we were speaking to Gemma Barth. Gemma's now in Australia. Has she returned to Australia for good and all, or is she back to Britain?
She has. She's gone for good, I'm afraid. And we miss her greatly.
A little bit of sunshine in the On Broadcast office has just got how Rachel and her Dachshund Bean is going to cope, I just don't know.
Absolutely, I don't know either. It's sad times.
So, Charlotte, talk to us about how long you've been with On Broadcast and why it is the premier PR company for things like the London Boat Show.
I've been with On Broadcast for almost a year, having had my own agency before, and then I merged in with On. We're here today at the London Boat Show, and there is so much to see and do. Everything from actually getting on the water and having a whack at paddle boarding through to millions and millions of pounds of yachts. So.
Well, every year we sort of think, a Sunseeker, yeah, maybe we should have a couple of those, really. I mean, one for On Broadcast and then one for Southside Broadcasting and Siren FM, of course, Siren Radio. But you mentioned, obviously, PR. I look after the PR course at the University of Lincoln. This is very much a public relations person's dream in so many ways. I mean, you've got Geoff Hurst, you've got Roger Hunt's jersey, you've got Her Majesty, Royal Highness Princess Anne. You've got a whole heap of goodies there.
Absolutely. There is so much going on today. It's quite hard to keep track, if I'm honest.
And how has the day been for yourself? Because we initially weren't sure whether this was just a press day, it was a press and public day. Of course, it starts today, it runs all the way through to the 14th of January. Is it your first ever boat show, given that you've just been with On Broadcast for a year?
This is the first one I've actually attended. Yeah, not the first one I've worked on, but first one I've attended, but I've done throughout my career, a long career. I had done lots of big exhibitions like this, so it's not new.
So what advice, Charlotte, would you give to, let's say, one of our undergraduates who says, I want to be the next Charlotte, I want to be the next On Broadcast thing? What would you actually say they should be looking for when it comes to the huge field of public relations?
Work experience is the best advice I can offer anyone. Get out there, work for free for as many people as possible, and really, really get to the nitty-gritty of what PR is about. And then find your specialism, find what's your bag. So my bag was always broadcast, which is why I've done it for 12 years. It might be fashion or it might be sports PR, whatever's your bag.
Well, in a few moments, you're going to kindly escort us over to two brothers, actually, who've been based in Kenya and been doing a variety of other bits and pieces. We'll just take an opportunity to say hi to our BAFTA award-winning director extraordinaire, Graham Harper. How are you, Graham?
I'm very well. Been out of breath, but I'm here.
Now, inside number 9, I think that's the theories which surely Reese Witherspoon and company must, Reese Shearsmith must be looking at actually doing some kind of event here in London before too long at the London Boat Show. This place is written for an inside number nine, isn't it?
I would dread them to be here, the chaos that would happen.
It will. Charlotte's off taking calls. It's a very important, busy person from public relations. Ed's still with us. We're going to be heading off in a few moments, Graham, to actually speak to these fine folk from Kenya, Alistair and Jimmy, co-founders of Koi. They're doing a whole range of other bits and pieces. Koi Clothing, of course, was launched in December 2016. And that'll be the first official interviewee that we feature on this, the London Boat Show for 2018. A few moments ago in the press area, we were teasing ahead to who was going to be the first interviewee for the 2018 London Boat Show as far as Siren Radio is concerned, and indeed Southside Broadcasting. It had to be Koi, did it not, Ed?
It absolutely did, yes.
We weren't being Koi, it is Koi. We're now delighted to speak to
Alistair Scott.
Alistair, one of the two brothers, of course, based in Kenya, who actually set up this awesome African-inspired clothing line.
Correct, thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Now, share with us the tale, because Graham will be listening to this from the point of view of a potential movie, of how you shift from Africa clothing. Africa, as you rightly said, Graham, landlocked country.
Some of it.
Exactly. How do you move from there to the London Boat Show?
It's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, we came up with this clothing idea inspired by the tribes of Kenya. And obviously, we give back 5% of sales to the local communities based on which colour we named the tribe after. The boat show came in just really because of the style of clothing, and it just sort of lends itself to the clientele that is in the yachting industry and that kind of thing. That's really how it came about.
A nautical edge to the whole system. Ed?
So what are some of the classic features of your clothing that sort of serve your Western audience, if you like?
It kind of varies, to be honest. If you go from the full out-and-out colourful jackets that we originally started with, they're very much, you know, sort of your, I guess, public school, but also, you know, boating industry, someone that wants to stand out but also look smart. And then we started producing the sort of more mass marketable products, which, as you see from the shirts and the blazer that I'm wearing now, they just involve hints of the subtle, you know, unique tribal fabric. Still got the story behind it and the colour there, but it just a bit more mass marketable.
You see, I know your last Doctor Who was directing David Tennant, Graham, but at the same time, surely this is the ideal costume for the next Doctor.
I think it's actually great for David Tennant.
Great for David Tennant as well.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you need to get Time Lords involved with this whole process.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely something we should look into.
In terms of the actual system, you mentioned something there about what goes back to the tribes and the other sort of connection. Just share with us a little bit more about that in terms of how that connection works, because it becomes a much more virtuous circle, really.
Yeah, so me and my brother, as you said, we were brought up in Kenya, surrounded by the Kenyan people that we grew up with. And, you know, Kenya has this unique, diverse culture where you've got 42 different tribes in one country, and there's very little intertribal breeding, so they're all still very unique with their own individual language, yet they all bring something unique and diverse. And this is just sort of our way of giving back to the country we grew up in and love so much. And by relating it to the rest of the world, we're sort of sharing the knowledge of those tribes. And then by naming each colour after a tribe, by reference to the colouring, that's sort of a way in which we can divert the funds back in a meaningful way. And the whole point of what we're doing really is that we're signing license agreements with these tribes to say, look, we're essentially paying you to use your name. And we obviously have a say in where the money goes. Currently, we're using it to fund school fees for kids that otherwise wouldn't be able to go to school. But the idea really is that if other companies in the world that currently do use tribes such as the Maasai name are not actually paying for it, and we're saying that's cultural appropriation and it's bad. If you're going to use the Maasai name, for example, to sell your products, you should be recognizing the Maasai. And that's sort of a process that we're trying to start. Obviously, we're a small company. We're not very big yet. But as we grow, we're sort of trying to set a precedent.
Graham.
So who designs and who makes the clothing?
So the clothing is designed, well, the fabric, as I said, it's designed by the tribal people themselves. But we select which ones we want, and then we design the actual clothes. Currently this stuff is actually still made in the UK. The long-term goal is to have everything made in Kenya, and we're currently undergoing sampling there. It's just getting the quality right at the moment. It's a little bit of a struggle, but as I said, to help the country the best we can would be to employ Kenyan people to make the products. So that is the long-term goal.
And who designs? Do you actually design yourself?
Yes.
Are you a designer?
No, I'm not a designer. I have friends who work in Vivienne Westwood, etc. And they've helped us to put together the basic designs of the products. For example, we have a friend that works at Hardy Amy's in Savile Row. He's helped us design these blazers and that shirt. And these ones, a lot of people who've seen a Vivienne Westwood design blazer will recognise the sort of peak lapel kind of
Normally
thing.
Normally it's the female folk who actually co-present with us on our midweek drivettes who do some modelling here. But I think possibly Ed and Graham, we might actually ask you to if it's possible actually to model some of these wonderful things so we can actually see things of that. Graham, sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't...
You will be a model in a few moments.
Don't worry.
I think you already,
already is.
Your question, Graham.
No, Ed.
So you've got a range of... Should we call them accessories as well? You've got some really useful things like belts and bow ties.
The belts are hand-beaded by the Maasai themselves in Kenya, so they're actually already made in Kenya. They're not our invention. They're a product that already existed, but we are sort of selling it more to the Western market. And I really do think they're a product that can go down well in this market as well.
And folk who can't get to the boat show, even if they're listening to this on the Thursday after it's launched, etc., listening to us at the podcast globally and so on, what's the web address? How can people get in touch with Koi Clothing?
All information is on www.koiclothing.com. That has our contacts there. Feel free to send us an email. Everything's available to buy online, as well as the stock products that you'll see there. We also do made to measure and bespoke, so get in contact and we can sort whatever you want.
And is this your first boat show?
It is, yes. Yeah, we're a new company. So
your thoughts?
So far, well, I've only been here for about an hour, but I love it. I mean, it's expansive, isn't it? It is.
It's what the XL was made for, let's face it.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Graham, you had a couple of other subsidiary questions.
First one was that's Koi with a K, isn't it, for the website?
Yes, sorry about that. I should have specified. K-O-Y clothing, yeah. That name comes from the fact that the material itself is called Kikoi. So we've essentially just taken half of the name of the fabric. And
nothing to do with fish or shyness.
And what's smashing to me is the underside of the collars of your jackets. Are the shirts the same? Do they?
Yes. So the shirts, you've got it on the inside and down there.
Completely like that. That's...
Oh, you mean no, not quite. No.
It's the next design, obviously. Oh, they're looking for.
Do that. I'm going to have two or three of those. Yeah.
Well, I think there are already customers sort of emerging from that point of view. Ed.
So what's your secret? So your two brothers.
Well, this is actually Ross. He's actually a friend.
He's a friend. Okay.
My brother is currently in Kenya.
So what's the secret there then? Because I mean, the thought of me trying to run a business with my sister would spell chaos. Have you managed to make it work?
On one hand, it's chaos. We have lots of arguments, but the best thing about that is because we're brothers, we can get over it. And because we're brothers, we
don't
speak.
Don't laugh, Graham. It's not as though they're Cain and Abel. It's Guy, exactly.
Just had to ask that. Well done.
No sibling rivalry whatsoever. Ross, so why are you here as a friend? Is it just supportive or is it security?
Yeah, so I grew up with them as well in Kenya. And I'm just helping out.
Are you modelling a jacket that's coming from Koi as well here?
I am. This is the Luo. And it's a really bright blue. And puts you out there.
It's a win-win situation, I think. Not only have you had the honour of being our first official interviewee at the 2018 London Boat Show, but hopefully we'll continue to connect with you as the months proceed.
Perfect, I would love that. Thank you very much. It's been an honour.
We've moved on from Koi clothing to sleek boat care. Environmentally safe, biodegradable, UV protectant, pH balanced. It's everything you actually need for boat care. We're speaking now to...
Scott Rudd.
Scott, talk to us about this wonderful stand here, which is LA039, if you're listening to this while the boat show is actually on. Sleek boat care, how does it help us look after our boats?
Well, we've developed a new surfactant, which is basically the active ingredient within cleaning chemicals. It's 100% natural, made from vegetable extracts. Performs exactly the same as a traditional acid, such as found in, I guess, sort of modern and traditional boat cleaners. And what this one does, it performs exactly the same as an acid, but without the negative effects on the environment. We also do a lot of environmental and sustainability on our website as well, including if you send your bottle back to us, we'll refill it and charge you 50% of the price.
So it's really genuinely environmentally friendly, which can only be good in the 21st century, Graham.
Absolutely. Salt must be a huge problem with care of boats. Is that something you have to deal with?
Our core product is the Sleek Pro, which is the all-over boat wash. And what that has in it is a chelating agent that basically combines with iron, magnesium, and potassium. And rather it's 100% natural, the basically alternative that we use, and that's really good for getting rid of hard water spots. And what other chemicals use, such as like the ones in the market at the moment, they use a synthetic chelating agent, which is called,
I think you've done very well with the names of chitinous agents and various other bits and pieces without worrying too much about the nomenclature. Is this your first time at the London Boat Show?
Yeah, this is our world debut.
World debut?
Yeah. It's basically our launching day. This is it, basically. It's our first trade show and first time our website's gone live as well.
And now here we are, Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting actually giving you that platform. Have the BBC visited you as yet?
Not quite, no.
Typical, you see. That's it. And once again, losing out to they know they're betters.
We have a few Olympians that have been sort of interested in us sponsoring them and things, which gives us hope for the future, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's very much to your credit. Now, would you like to give a name check to your colleague who's providing some wonderful sort of in-service stuff just behind the desk there?
That's Emma Tupper. She's also the other co-owner as well.
So, Emma, when this was brought forward as being co-owner of this company, was it a big leap into the unknown? Was it a case of have faith, take that leap now?
Well, Scott and I went to university together, and we're both kind of avid sailors and environmentalists, and we sort of spotted a bit of a gap in the market. There's no other environmentally friendly cleaning products out there that kind of perform as well as regular alternatives, so we thought that we'd sort of join forces and set this up together.
And which university did you actually attend?
University of Liverpool.
So, and is there a Scouse connection at all there? Is it a case of you're civilising the southerners here?
No, we're Scott's from Preston and I'm from Leeds.
Yeah, it's the north. It's the north once again. Preston and Leeds obviously went through that. Graham?
What was it that made you do this about boating and the cleansing of the boats?
I guess because we're both sailors and we've spent time cleaning boats together, it sort of became apparent how much of the chemicals are actually going into the water when you clean the boat. So making an environmentally friendly one seems like a good option.
I think that's amazing. I mean, again, if you ever wanted proof of the success of young entrepreneurs developing a whole range of things, we've got it here.
We have, yeah, no, I find it.
Ed, thoughts of yourself?
You've got some lovely colours here, guys, and you've kind of got a little bit of sort of beauty product colouring going on. You've got that sort of mix between something being practical and looking quite nice as well.
Well, our first, when we were sort of designing the products and like the brand, we wanted it to sort of colour coordinate, so like you didn't actually have to look at the bottle, you didn't have to actually look at the name. You could quickly know that blue is associated with the oil of a boat wash, and therefore the boat upholstery cleaner is associated with red, which makes it a lot easier if you're quickly wanting to get things done, because no one wants to stay around cleaning the boat. You want to get it done and not get off. So that was our main objective when choosing the colours.
And that kind of degree area, what was the degree you were actually reading? How did it sort of develop?
Well, Emma studied marketing and I studied business.
And from there, obviously, you decided to actually use this as an ideal opportunity to work as a platform. Who needs the Dragon's Den? Fantastic. How can people get in touch with you, good souls, if they can't get to the boat show? Website's just gone live, as we've heard. Is it Sleek Boat Care?
It's www.sleekboatcare.co.uk, and we're also quite active on Instagram and Twitter, which is just Sleek Boat Care.
And have you scheduled a whole series of things? Will you be at the Southampton Boat Show later on in the year? Will you be heading off to various other things? Or is it a case of you'll see how this goes in London and then take it from there?
Yeah, I think the idea is to sort of get a feel for the market at the London Boat Show. But definitely, I think in the future, we're planning to hit up quite a lot of the boat shows throughout the year. I think we'll definitely try and get Southampton booked as well.
Have you been to directly to Chandlery's to sell your product through them? I mean, and have you had good reception?
Yeah, well, because we're based in the north, we don't live too far away from Lake Windermere, which is where a lot of Chandlery's are, and we've got quite a lot of them on board at the moment, and that's kind of been our stomping ground since we launched, because we've been able to test our products there, and like, we've had really good feedback, and a couple of them are actually showcasing our products in their Chandlery's now as well, which is good.
Oh, that's smashing. Well done.
Sleek Boat Care will continue, and remember, we're privileged as well to actually have been here. Are we your first media interviewees that you've done in terms of radio?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Well, there we are. They'll always have a soft spot in our hearts at Siren Radio for that. Scott and Emma, many thanks indeed.
Thank you very much.
So from cleaning products and from clothing, we now find ourselves getting ever closer to the actual boats and things. Solar power for boats and yachts. Again, keeping the ecological theme going, and eco-friendly nature, etc. Solar power products we're now about to speak to.
It's Igor, I-G-O-R.
Igor, share with us what marvellous things you've got here and how boats can actually use solar power to produce all sorts of wonderful things.
On any boat, there's a range of electrical appliances that requires electricity and power. And if it's a sailing boat, chances are that boat owners would struggle to extract this power, to get this power, because there's no alternator or an engine that is constantly working and charging the batteries. Power is typically required for things like a fridge, navigation lights, if it's a bigger boat, autopilot, and lots of other appliances. What we offer to such customers is we've got a range of semi-flexible solar panels, rigid solar panels, about 30 different types to choose from. We've got about 50 different types of solar charge controllers. These are devices that look after your battery to make sure that it's not overcharged, it's fully conditioned. We've got battery monitors, inverters, our own batteries for leisure applications, and lots of other associated products which are used for solar power systems.
Igor, do I detect a slight East European accent there?
Yes, I've got a Russian background. So
Очень хорошо,
yeah. So as a result, an accent, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's fine. Roman Abramovich would not be where he is today without solar power, I'm sure.
No, he's got a very big yacht and
exactly.
Lots of diesel that he's burning every day. So
yeah, so it's not Roman, if you're listening to this, and who knows, you may be, just bear that in mind. Stop burning that diesel. Ed.
So what you're selling today and over the next few days, is this? Are you selling this to people who build boats, so it goes in at the very start, or are these replacement bits, or are they bits that people can sort of buy and change later on? Who is your market?
Largely this is a retail show, so most of our customers who are coming to visit us here, they would be retrofitting solar panels onto the existing boats. We have also trade accounts with lots of boat owners, marinas, engineers, in many cases our products are installed at the very beginning, so when the boat is being planned. If I can show you just one example, well, your listeners can't really see.
We'll take the photographs afterwards, Igor.
Yeah, it's a solar panel with a rear junction box at the back, where the box, the cables, and the junction box is all being integrated into the boat, and it leaves an absolutely flat professional surface and finish. This is an example of a product that boat builders would use, and maybe even architects would use to plan it from the very outset. So have a look at this.
Yep.
So, very thin, just 2 millimeters thin fiberglass, semi-flexible, and all the cabling is at the back inside, which means that when architects or boat builders are planning it, they would plan a recess for this product to be integrated into the boat. This is fully walkable, so you can mount it on the deck, and then it's a very strong fiberglass surface. It doesn't prop up, it doesn't stick out that much. So this is an example for the boat builders.
I can see that this being really big when you start having electric motors for boats, because that's surely... Is that happening now?
Yeah, it is happening now, yeah. So we are working with lots of boat owners. We are also very active in the market for narrow boats. So not only marine and sea boats, but also for narrow boats, where these electric motors, they are getting more and more popular. The penetration is quite high. We supply quite often a system consisting of 10, 12 of large solar panels of that sort of size to cover the whole surface, the whole roof, and then to use this for the electric engine.
So I can also think that if it's quite reasonably priced, has to be said. Couldn't I not buy one of these?
£294.99, to be precise.
Sort of get one of these and put it in my back garden? Is there a market for these in the home?
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on what exactly you are planning to power, but one of our most popular products for gardens, for sheds, for garages, is for lighting applications, because you would often have a shed that is located further away from your home, and you would it would be difficult to get the electricity, the cable, all the way, say, throughout your garden to your shed. But you need lights there, you need to see your tools, you need to see things. So we would supply a fairly small solar panel, which would be put on the roof, and then a number of lights and a little unit with the battery. And then in your garage or in your shed, you would simply get solar lighting from solar electricity.
It's a photonic universe indeed from that point of view. And Igor, I think we've just had a wonderful sort of insight to all manner of potential 21st century technologies for solar lighting systems.
Very good.
Excellent.
How can people get in touch with your good self online, Igor?
Most of our products are sold online or over the phone. We've got our own warehouse and office in Kent, in fact, Orpington and Kent. But the best way to contact us is to
go to photonicuniverse.com.
Yeah, to our website www.photonicuniverse.com. Or give us a phone call 0203-150-1111.
Amazing. I mean, spasiba, Igor. Generally wonderful. I mean, I think it's an outrageously... is this your first time at the London Boat Show?
No, we've been exhibiting for several years now. I think it's our third or fourth year.
So how's it shaping up in your own opinion?
It's always very... We are... I don't know if I should say this, but we are the only specialized company. We almost don't have any competitors. We're always very popular, and
it's a success story, Igor. Yeah, that's the classic thing. Fantastic. Story, yeah. Photonic Universe continues. You convinced us. We're delighted to have spent some time with your good self today.
If you come to us next year, at the moment we're getting a range of wind turbines, which will be integrated into our solar systems, because one thing which where the UK unfortunately doesn't have a great weather advantage is that in the winter there's very limited amount of sunshine. So for customers who require flat power throughout the whole year, they require some supplement, some additional power source, charging source in the winter. As a result, many customers have been asking us, and now we're getting our first consignments of wind turbines in stock.
Now, Graham, you may be able to answer this, because sometimes, you know, things take a tangent, and I'm even more bemused. Last year, of course, at the Sunseeker stand, it was officially launched by the wonderful Joanna Lumley. This time round, the accent seems to be very much on football. Now, as an Arsenal fan, we're obviously looking now at a demonstration of football on a yacht. Is that a safe thing to do? Is it where, I mean, would Theo Walcott and Jack Wilshere benefit from actually sort of playing football on a yacht as opposed to losing to Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup?
I think they've got no hope in hell. it's odd, isn't it? Isn't this an odd thing? Unless that's what they're saying, that the boats are so smooth and calming, you can take on any weather, any seas.
We're not sure whether we will get anybody from Sunseeker to actually speak with us today. We normally have a little attempt to speak with us. Sometimes they speak to us, sometimes they don't. I think Sir Geoff Hurst is due to be here later on. And there has been a theme which is very much tying in with the 2018 Russian World Cup. It seems a bit unusual.
Oh no, not with big boats like this. All the oligarchs, and they're the only ones who can really afford that, aren't they? I'd love to see them play a proper football match on one of these boats.
Well, I think they were certainly playing various keepy-uppy things there. And
Are they professional footballers?
Please give a warm welcome wouldn't have to thought our host that... this afternoon. Please welcome Jake Humphrey.
From BBC Sport, of course.
Oh, there we are. Of course.
And Jake, I believe, is a Norwich supporter, so he's not a real fan.
I can't imagine even Arsene Wenger... wants to play football.
Signing up for Sport in Motion, I really don't know. Anyway, let's hear what Jake Humphries is going to actually be talking about.
Here on the stand as well, and it's an official warm welcome to the launch of Sunseeker at the London Boat Show for this year. This is the official stand opening, and we can't wait for all of you to come up here and take a look.
Just in case you're wondering, you're listening to Siren Radio on location at the London Boat Show 2018. Jake Humphreys is officially actually opening up proceedings. Not quite in the same league as Joanna Lumley, but doing his best, I think.
Absolutely. However, Joanna Lumley last year, that was sensational. She was just such a joyful person to watch and listen to.
Anyway, Chief Executive Officer of Sunseeker now being introduced to the crowd. I think... It's interesting, as we're listening to this, we also see we've got, for those people who are somewhat hard of hearing, an official signer actually signing the interview as it's proceeding, really, which is quite interesting.
Yes, it is, especially, I'm not saying that people who are deaf are not allowed to go sailing, but it must be very hard to actually be a person who's hard of hearing at sea with all the things you need to be able to listen to and hear and check out with your ears.
So how close are you in the Harper households to actually purchasing a Sunseeker then, Graham?
long.
We're going to have words with these production companies. Who knows? When the Phil Hurdwood movie manifests itself and there's a global blockbuster, take a percentage of that. Maybe we'll get that sorted.
Now you're talking. And now we'll probably come and have a look at a Sunseeker. Definitely.
Way forward. Both for Phil and indeed his colleagues as well.
The problem is that I love... tinkering sailing. I'm not that desperately interested in the big gym palaces where you just show off what you've got. I'm more interested in doing it. I like sailing. I'm not an expert. I've had a little bit of experience, tiny, but it's fun. And the fraternity is fun.
Again, we're standing just in front of the Enfun yachting here. We might have a few words with them in a few moments. Jake is still in deep conversation there, so it's looking as though it's another success. So your initial thoughts on the 2018 London Boat Show?
Having been here about 25, 30 minutes, so many people here. I mean, it's quite early in the day and there's a lot of people, a lot of interest. And a lot more, as you said, there seems to be a lot more clothes here rather than... There were more boats than there were clothes last year. Now there's a huge array of... obviously very popular clothing.
Although, as Ed and myself said earlier, in the official guide to the London Boat Show, they've gone for boats, and more boats, really, which is, I suppose, not remotely ironic, given that it is the 2018 London Boat Show.
If we're going through or coming out of a period of austerity, you would never think it. I mean, this looks...
Jeff Hurst is now getting the official line. Here's Sir Jeff Hurst here, hat-trick hero, about to be introduced. Glorious times.
There he is. Yes, very serious. I bet he's got a boat.
I'm okay, still standing.
Good. You placed an order for a boat?
Yes, I've got a couple of those.
Oh, no, just a couple. I suppose it's, at the time you maybe didn't realise quite what a remarkable achievement it was. Not just to win the World Cup, but to score a hat-trick in London 50 years later. You must still talk about it every single day.
Well, people still talk about it. I don't think you're aware of the magnitude of the occasion when you're down there doing it. You're so involved in it. You understand how big it is up to today when people talk about where they were on the day.
Do you remember where you were when England won the World Cup in 1966, Graham?
Ooh, I was just joining the BBC. I was my first year at the BBC, so I wasn't interested in football whatsoever. I certainly didn't really take on board how exciting it was that England almost did win the World Cup against Germany. It didn't really hit home to me until much later in my life.
My father, who was the interpreter for the Czechoslovakian and Russian football teams at the time, was given free tickets to the final, but because I was too young, I never went. So there we are, that's another lost opportunity.
What?
Infant, you see. Ed wasn't even born, but never mind.
Oh, no, you were. Yes, you would have been about three, if you were lucky. Whereas I was a mature 21-year-old by then.
There you are, you see. And I gather that at the end of the day, having actually won the trophy, they simply went home by bus.
Oh, yes, I don't. And also, there wasn't the money there is now. I mean, I don't think the guys in those days ended their life rich.
The equivalent of £180,000 a week.
Ooh, I mean, can you imagine? Isn't that ridiculous?
That's Neymar for you. Anyway, Jeff's doing his wonderful stuff here. Again, quite an interesting connection there in terms of how Sunseeker are developing the brand.
It's a very important question, is it? If it gets nicked, there's only our fingerprints.
Well, one of them has got nicked, of course, but
hopefully this one won't be. Would you like to go and check the World Cup for us and bring it to the front so people can have a look? Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. This is what you get for winning the World Cup back in 66. The Jules Rimet Trophy, of course. It wasn't even lifted back in 66. It was no longer around.
This ice is the same size as the Ashes, for goodness sake.
Yeah, don't talk about that, Graham. I thought we'd try and avoid the entire thing without talking about the Ashes.
It's a brimming cricket game.
4-0, 4-0.
The world had come to the end.
4-0, and it just was too painful.
Not at all. Just got to get better.
Yeah, that's worth a round of applause. And even a legend holding the Jules Rimet Trophy.
Now it's the slight hush time as the official cutting of the ribbons is about to take place. Jeff Hurst doing the whole thing.
It's David Dimbleby moment, isn't it?
Hushed. Or even Richard, perhaps.
I was thinking, yeah, okay. It is a bit 50s, isn't it?
The ribbon is officially being cut, not in a virtual sense. He's cut the ribbon. The Sunseeker model for this year has now officially opened. I think I said that, Jake.
Yeah.
See, he's a Norwich supporter. He wouldn't get that.
So,
Ed, as somebody who's, I think it's fair to say, not really interested in football, how did you cope with the awesomeness of Jeff Hurst, Sir Jeff Hurst, only player to have ever scored 3 goals in a World Cup final in 1966, although one of them possibly wasn't over the line, officially launching the Sunseeker brand for 2018?
It went mostly over my head, I'm afraid, Alex.
That's why I spent time talking to Graham. We realised that.
I was trying to sort of work out... I mean, you know, what is time? But who is the audience for Sunseeker? And if their audience is
people footballers
who are looking back in time, that's fine. Didn't seem to have quite have the glamour of Joanna Lumley.
We have been saying that, but, you know, each year has its own magic, and clearly we've got the Bond theme there. Maybe, actually, Graham, they should actually go more Bond next year.
Say again?
Maybe they should go more Bond next year, get Daniel Craig in.
I think they should. I'm surprised he wasn't here.
We had Sir Jeff Hurst, who was licensed to thrill. Thank you, Sir Jeff. I take it then, Ed, you're not keen to actually rush up and have your photograph taken either with the FA Cup, which I guess is around here, or indeed with the original Jules Rimet replica trophy.
I think I can wait, put it that way. And I also didn't wear my slip-on shoes either this year, so it's a bit of a nuisance if I want to go on. These boats just seem, I don't know, last year they seemed impressive. This year, they seem almost vulgar. They're so big, I have to say.
Graham, vulgar, big?
Last year, I was really impressed by the style of the ships, the boats, and how well they were made, etc. But it was like walking into a really exclusive apartment somewhere in New York or whatever, and I really like the little boats mucking about on the river kind of boats.
We're going to see some of those little boats now, because let's face it, if it wasn't for the little boats, the Germans would have won the war.
Absolutely.
We need to see some water as well, I think. Ooh. Let's see some water.
We have actually reached a stage where you're kind of at the other extreme in terms of size to the Sunseeker, but here we have equal quality with 5-0 and ribeye proudly displayed across this stand, and we're delighted now to speak to
Ross Chivers.
Ross, talk to us about the brand that we've got here, the ribeye brand, etc., the prime cross section that we've actually got here, and why you're such a successful company, having been around for 50 English years.
Well, Ribeye Boats, we're a Dartmouth-based second-generation family business. The 5-0 is actually, we spin that around, that's a 2-0, so we are celebrating our 20th anniversary of the show.
See, there we are, it's 20 years. Well, I'm sure it'll only be a matter of 30 years before we get to 5-0, so 20 years there. So talk to us again about the actual thing itself. How long have you been connected with Ribeye? Ribeye.
So I'm actually part of the family business, so it was my father, Charles Chivers, who founded the company back in 98. Now retired, the second generation, and plus some other colleagues are taking the business forward. And we specialise in the design and manufacture of luxury performance leisure ribs, which are designed for the UK market. That's where we do well. But also, what's organically happened is the superyacht tender markets come to us, so our ribs naturally fit as a tender option for these large yachts, where the tender's got to be good in service, a dry ride. They've got to look good, but also be reliable, and that goes hand in hand in what we do.
Your surname Chivers, any relation to Martin Chivers, given that clearly we've been talking about a footballing theme that's been permeating the boat show this year?
No relation at all, no.
We're perfectly okay.
Yeah, we're a rugby family, not football, I'm afraid.
Very sensible, yeah, exactly. So yeah. You know where we are with that size. Yeah. Graham, thoughts from yourself?
Who would buy this? Is your market companies or private individuals?
So this 9.5 metre ribeye here, the Prime 941, this is at the higher end of the cost spectrum for what we do. A boat like this, we're looking at it, is about 240, 250 grand. So we're very much the sort of, we're at the top end of the day boater in the Med. We sell a few of these in the UK, but this is more of a super yacht tender. It's a very customisable, highly engineered build. So not a high volume product. We bought about 10 of these a year. Our bread and butter and what we're known for is more around the sort of 6 metre size point, where boats can be from say 35 to up to 50. And that you very much get the sort of London family man, family that has the second home in say Sulcombe or Dartmouth, where we're based. And the boat stays down there and they use it for the summer holidays. That's what we're known for predominantly.
Sounds wonderful. And again, if people are looking to access this, they can't get to the boat show this year, what's the web address? How can they get in contact with yourself?
Well, hashtag ribeye boats. If you punch that in your phone, punch that in on the website, it'll take you to all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram. If you type ribeye boats or just ribeye, even into Google, you can't miss it.
Like ribeye steak, but you wouldn't want to actually have a steak to actually sort of get you across water because it wouldn't work.
Absolutely not.
Back in the 1970s and 80s, of course, the height of sophistication was being invited either to a Tupperware party or to have chicken in a basket. Here we have something which is almost a boat in a bag, Graham.
I love it. I might buy one of these.
And let's just talk about what we're looking, because Ed, you spotted this particular one, the boat that folds into a bag. What describe what we're looking at here.
Well, this is the Zodiac Cadet brand, and we're just looking further afield, actually. There's several, all different sizes. This one doesn't have an engine on it, although I think it's got the capacity for one, but it just will fold into the back of your car. And rather different to those rather large Sunseekers, this would do the job. You could potter around a little lake.
5,000 of these in one Sunseeker.
You certainly could. You could get one with nature. This has got an oar on it and everything. Look, this will do me fine.
So ultimately, we found your dream boat then. Actually,
I'm not sure about the colour, but I'm sure you can do. You can get red.
Graham, is this something Bernadette will be happy to actually sort of see if you come back from the London Boat Show today, thinking,
no,
oh, you,
no, definitely not. She'd be really, really. I think I'd be divorced.
There we are. Message is quite clear there. For a single man about town with musical interests, the boat that folds into a bag, Ed Wellman, lecturer and yes. So on. For somebody who's an award-winning director married to a fine French lady, no, it'll lead to divorce.
No, but I do like it, and I bet that would be fun. That would be a lot of fun, and not expensive, really.
After the excitement of Jake Humphreys introducing Sir Geoff Hurst and the launch of the Sunseeker, and clearly working our way through the Excel Centre for the 2018 London Boat Show, clearly Graham and Ed, and to a certain extent myself, becoming chronologically gifted thinking, we could really do with a bed, just have a little lie down now. So exciting. And who should manifest themselves but the Marine Bedding Company, everything you need for a comfortable night on board. We're delighted now to speak to
Tim Cheatham from Marine Bedding. Good afternoon.
Tim, talk to us. I mean, presumably this could be one of the most popular stands going for people to just say, I just want to test the mattress here. Just see how it looks, really.
Oh, absolutely, yes. We don't necessarily have serious buyers, but we do have tired buyers.
I like that. Graham.
I suppose bedding and your beds on a boat are fairly important, that you get the right thing and the right. What can you offer? What do you do that's so different from anybody else?
Well, the fundamental issue with most standard beds on board is that they're actually just made out of foam. And if you spend any more than a couple of nights on board, you'll soon realise that they're not very comfortable. And whether it's a cheap or expensive boat, they're not comfortable. So we offer quite a unique option, really, because we offer pocket sprung with either a built-in topper or just a standard pocket sprung that gives you effectively domestic style comfort on board. And they're all made bespoke, so we make the templates, I make the templates ourselves, we then take to factory and produce potentially unique ones just for your boat, because shapes do vary so much. So it's a properly bespoke service from end to end.
So your customers already avail themselves of lying down from that perspective. It's just an extraordinary sort of world here. Ed.
Oh yeah, I've got a good question for you. I think is my mum and dad have a canal boat, and there's a major performance a couple of times a year when the bedding has to be all taken off and all put back on again before the summer voyages and so forth. And I'm holding here some of your dry mesh anti-moisture layer. Now, this isn't just splashing the beds with water, is it? This is the sort of ambience dampness that throughout the year. So what is this?
Right, well, the dry mesh is actually an interface between the bed base and the bottom of the mattress. What it's giving you is the facility to allow the mattress to breathe. Because at the moment, like you've just said, the whole problem is with boats is they get damp, and especially if you can't put things like dehumidifiers on board. So it's actually a method of giving the mattresses a chance to breathe, and any moisture that builds up while you're sleeping on it gets a chance in the, during the day to dry out. And it definitely does what it says on the tin. It works very well.
This could be the solution to any parental disharmony you've had over the years with respect to getting the right kind of bedding for your canal boat.
Absolutely, I couldn't comment, but I think, yes, this could use this at home as well, couldn't you?
Yeah. We use it in motorhomes, caravans, horse boxes, and home, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good way of doing it.
Graham?
Is weight a consideration? Or is it, having not laid...
These models, by the way, you've actually got to work for you?
Well, you know, I'm beginning to think they might be. They're certainly rooting spot. Yeah, I think, I haven't seen them snoring yet, but I think they are still moving.
I might just grab a few words of that. Yeah. So we're just going to say, how does this actually feel as you're obviously sort of taking this whole seriously in terms of testing the boat?
I'm going to put my hand in my pocket, I think.
Hand in his pocket, so yeah, it's good
exactly
news.
Exactly, good. But now, in answer to Graham's question, weight really... It can be a consideration, but we've deliberately utilised lightweight products. So unlike your domestic mattress at home that relies on, frankly, weight to give it comfort because of the materials that are used, we actually specifically choose lightweight materials, but still gives you domestic quality, and that's the important bit. So that, especially where you've got lockers underneath beds, you know, you don't want a heavy old mattress when you're manhandling.
Yeah. No, that's really...
As you said, applications for yachts, motorboats, super yachts, motorhomes, caravans, horse boxes, and so on. So really, any of the lifestyle areas that we covered for Siren FM, the dry mesh anti-moisture layer, three-dimensional woven polyester mesh, plus, of course, the marine bedding company, it's a win-win scenario.
If it's good enough for Alan Sugar's boat, it's good enough for yours.
It's a performance cars, and so we have a brand of its own called a Bath. Which comes from Carlo Bath, that came in about 1945. You might remember some of the older Fiat 500s with the back of the car open so it could get the air in the back. That's how a Bath sort of started its partnership with Fiat, and that's how a Bath then became part of the Fiat group.
And presumably at the London Boat Show, having the Bath here, it's a sort of wonderful small-sized car that you can put on a Sunseeker yacht and then drive off after, as and when you want to.
Possibly, absolutely. I mean, this is the Bath 695 Rivale. It's actually a partnership with Riva. So you'll see some of the same design cues on the Riva as you will on this car, such as the aquamarine waterline, some of the dashboard, the carbon in there. Also on the rear of the car, the grills you can see, which actually you see on the side of the Rivale. As well, so it's a partnership between the two of us, two giants of Italian manufacturing coming together to design this.
So Ed is a Toyota man, I'm a Volkswagen Urban Fox. Graham, you are a Toyota as well, I think.
I know, currently a Jag.
Jag, you're
old Jag.
No, it's fine. So is there a way in which... Yes.
I want it.
So why would they switch to the Abarth?
Well, it depends on your actual requirements. I mean, this is a very nice, sporty little car. This actually is a 1.4 engine, but delivers 180 horsepower. And it has a sport setup and all sport seats and things like that. So it's a nice, nippy little drive for you. It depends on what you need it for. If you're going to be, if you need a big boot, then obviously this isn't the car for you. But if you need to run around a city or even in the... Italian short little narrow streets, then it's ideal.
21st century Italian job, perhaps?
Yes, we did do a remake of the Italian job a couple of years back with three of our cars, which you can see on our
cars
YouTube
are the
channel.
Best thing about the remake, is all I shall say at this stage, but what the heck?
Possibly, I couldn't possibly comment
on indeed,
that.
No, indeed, we wouldn't expect you to, but it's the self-preservation society, as Michael Caine once said.
Yes, we did our own version. We actually took some cars to Turin and remade a little bit of a film on our YouTube channel. So
you have the Abarth as opposed to the Minis, and hang on a minute, lads, I got a great idea.
Exactly.
Movie classic, a movie classic moment.
Oh, this! I would love to make a movie with about 10 of those. That'd be wonderful. And something different from the Italian job.
Well, this is the man to speak to, BAFTA award-winning Graham Director, Graham Harper. Mind you, it would be interesting if your surname was Director, actually. I won't go there. Ed, final thoughts?
Well, it's got three sets of very friendly eyes on the front here. And also, sneakily, you've still got Fiat-branded windscreen wipers on there, so you've got a little brand there. Yep. So if we own one, or two, or three, however many, what's the deal with getting them serviced? Do Fiat do that?
So most Fiat garages actually have the Abarth franchise in it as well. So you can, as long as the Abarth franchise is at the dealership, you can have your servicing and warranty completed at that dealership. And most of them do actually sell the Abarth as well. So
who is your top market? So I'm thinking that I see in the Fiat version of this, which is the 500, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Often a lot of white ones are driven by quite a lot of young people who get them bought from by their parents as their first car. Is that your sort of market for this as well?
So we have our first Abarth is a 145 horsepower car, and sometimes the younger generation decide to pick that one. Yeah. For a demographic point of view, for the Rivale, it's open to everyone, as in the whole ranges. Mm. It's all about people who enjoy performance and enjoy that driving sensation. That's what it's really about. So it can be any age, and I assure you, we have customers of any age driving our cars, which is fantastic for us.
How much?
So the get your wallet out, be the great fantastic.
We're ready.
The Abarth 6.5, which is obviously the hatchback version, starts at 22.8 for that. Then we've obviously got the convertible, which is a little bit more because of the roof mechanics.
And we have identified it's not a bird, it's not a plane, it's a bath.
It certainly isn't a bath. Yes.
Have you ever thought of making a car that could actually become a boat, an amphibious?
I don't think it's...
clearly, in The Spy Who Loved Me, that's what Roger Moore's James Bond had with the Lotus Esprit, and that was 1977, so come on, Fiat, what's happening?
Currently, with the roads the way they are, maybe it is a way to go, but I don't think it's currently in our plans to do a boat, but I think we've already been asked a few times, is it an amphibious vehicle, and no, it isn't.
So double-checking, best way forward is on websites. Look at ABARTH, and all the details will come out through there.
Yeah, it's abarthcars.co.uk. And that's our UK website.
And do you have a special price for the show?
No, it's just the price is the price, as they say.
All right. But consistent.
We're happy to talk about our prices at the show.
Now, it may well be that Graham and Ed were taken by the Fiat and the Abarth, etc. here, but I think when we're talking about extraordinary modes of transport and the best way forward, it has to be the helicopter. We're delighted now to be able to speak to
Abby Hensby from GB Helicopters.
And
Andy Cunningham from GB Helicopters.
Abby and Andy. Abby, talk to us a little bit about what we've actually got here in terms of what I think is the best way to return to Lincoln. I think actually we should actually say this would get us back to Lincoln quite happily today.
We're here today offering VIP and business charter. This particular aircraft that you're looking at is an AS355 Twin Scroll. It will seat up to 5 passengers. And from London back to Lincoln, you could be looking about 50 to 55 minutes.
Exactly. See that?
Say £55. I was about to sign up. Yes. Okay.
So is this for Sunseeker owners who want to actually have a quick way of actually getting to and from shore and various other bits? This is a travel-based thing. Talk to us about how the company was set up and founded.
So the company set up, it's based for absolutely everyone. It doesn't particularly have to be an owner or high net worth individual. You put 5 passengers in the back and it immediately becomes affordable if you split the cost between 5 people. So we do a lot of work with race goers for the horse racing, events throughout the UK, music, festivals, that sort of thing.
Constantly seeing whether it's Royal Ascot or indeed the Ebor Festival at York that people will be arriving more and more via helicopter, because let's face it, you can't trust the roads these days.
Absolutely.
Abby, how did you join the company?
I joined the company 6 years ago. My father worked in aviation, so I ended up back into aviation as my career, so thoroughly enjoy it.
Ed?
So, come on, how exciting is it when it takes off? Is it a real wow moment?
Certainly a very different way to travel. No, it's brilliant, because you can go door to door, so it's very convenient for what people want to do.
And I was very impressed when we were using helicopters actually at the York Maze, that it does give you a wonderful sense of actually safety as well. People sometimes get a bit concerned about, what if it chops my head off? No, it won't, as long as you actually adopt sensible procedures and don't sort of jump up and down when it's landing. Anyway, that's my health and safety thing. Graham.
Have you ever been involved with taking people out to yachts and boats out at sea and landing on them?
It's not something we currently specialise in. There are operators in the UK that can take clientele out to yachts. It's a specialist activity which the crew and the aircraft are obviously equipped to do so. It's not something that we currently do, however it is something that we will look to do in the future.
And you're tucked away very much at the very back of one of the holes here in terms of the London Boat Show. Are you a regular here? Is this your first time? How often have we actually seen you being presented at the London Boat Show?
This is the first time at the London Boat Show. First time actually exhibiting our aircraft anywhere for any event.
So when the idea came through, and Abby, perhaps you'd like to take this and say, let's go to the London Boat Show. Did you say, but there's something slightly wrong? I mean, aren't we a helicopter? You know, what are we doing at the boat show?
No, not at all. I mean, a lot of our clientele, we do trips from their door to the ports for delivery to yachts and cruises, and also a lot of our clients own boats as well. So it's definitely a very similar level of market, so not a shock to us at all.
Graham, I'm thinking about next time you do some location shooting in Romania, you obviously need to have some helicopter.
No, I'm going to stay on the ground.
So you don't do self-drive hire then?
We don't know. No. It comes with the pilot.
Just check it.
It's a win-win situation. People listening to this, how can they get in touch with you online? What's the best way to go to if they want to find out more details about the company?
So you can find us online, www.gbhelicopter.com. You'll find all our contact information on there. If you ring the telephone number, you'll come through to either myself or Abby in operations. Even if you want a non-obligation quotation, feel free to give us a call. And we can go from there.
I like the simplicity of it. It's not high tech, which makes it harder, but it's raw, it's pure. Not my words, but the words of the legendary, awesome Susie Goodall. Susie, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
So here we are with Susie's Seven Seas Essentials, 30,000 miles alone, 300 days non-stop. What inspired you to do this whole ginormous Olympian task?
Well, it's a race that's there to be done. So short answer is, well, why not? And, well, when I was young, I saw, you know, people like Ellen MacArthur doing it, and I thought, one day, I want to do that.
And you have and done even more from that point of view. And we're standing here with your stand here, which obviously ties in with Susie Goodall Racing, delivered by DHL. Just talk to us a bit about the Golden Globe race.
So the Golden Globe race is a solo, non-stop, round-the-world yacht race, which starts in a little under 6 months' time. It's the 50th anniversary of the original Golden Globe, which took place in 1968-69, which saw nine competitors start and just one finish, which was Sir Robert Knox Johnson. So this 2018 race is a celebration of that achievement. So we're doing it in traditional boats, traditional means of navigation.
Now that for me would be absolutely terrifying. So what's the secret? How are you going to actually succeed? Is it just a case of feel the fear and do it anyway?
I think there is a bit of that, feel the fear and do it anyway, but it's, to be honest, I think all in the preparation. It's been 2.5 years preparing just to get to here, so preparation.
Graham?
Are you, when you first start on a massive race, long race at sea on your own, when you first start, what's the difference in feeling when you start and the nerves or whatever you have? And at the end, how have you changed? What's happened?
Well, the Golden Globe is yet to take place. It starts this year in June. So I'll be able to answer that question, honestly, in March.
You'll be a success, Susie. Of course you'll be a success.
How long have you sailed for alone in length of time?
So as part of training for the race, I did a loop of the Atlantic, which took... Well, I stopped... around in Lisbon, Lanzarote, Antigua, Azores, but that took spread over, I think it was 4 or 5 months. But the Atlantic, both ways, being very gentle with a boat, took almost a month.
And obviously partnered with DHL, I would have thought it's an interesting way of actually delivering things in more ways than one, really.
Absolutely, delivered around the world, safely posted.
Genius. How can people follow you, Susie, in terms of the ways forward? And I do like that Seven Seas Essential line that's through that. Celestial Almanac, Sextant, VHF Radio, Whiskey, of course, always interesting. These are the top 10 tips for actually working through the sort of things that you do on a daily basis.
I don't know if it's top 10. It's just things that I'll definitely be taking with me. The whiskey was Sir Robin that said to me, if you do one thing, just make sure you got a few bottles of whiskey with you for those dull moments.
Do you go in a sort of zen-like trance, a sort of meditative thing, where you actually think, you know, let's just work our way through this? So Robin Knox Johnson's actually just appearing on the video beforehand. Is it something where it's something where you become one with nature?
You do, in a sense, become one, but not, I wouldn't say a meditative trance. But yeah, you're very aware of your surroundings and what's happening.
It's been a genuine privilege today sharing some thoughts with your good self, Susie. How can people actually follow you online and various other things? And indeed, keep up with the DHL challenge as well.
So there's the DHL Discover website, which has basically documented the journey from start to now. There's also the Golden Globe website, goldenglobeace.com.
And will you be back for next year's boat show to tell us how it went, or will you still be at sea then?
I'll still be at sea this time next year.
So hopefully we'll catch up in, what, say, 2019 then? 2020.
2020, I'll come back.
After the awesomeness that was Susie over there and her around-the-world yacht challenge, in fact, and sails thing, clearly she would need to have some nutrition. And so we actually have landed ourselves at a place which normally would not be out of place, Graham, at the Lincolnshire Show, the Great Yorkshire Show, many other places. But here we are at the XL Centre for the London Boat Show, speaking to...
Ollie. I'm Ollie from the Flapjackery.
Devon-made luxury flapjacks, of course, Ollie.
That's right, absolutely. So we have a little tiny bakery in Tavistock in Devon, where we only make flapjacks. So we just do the one thing, but make them very special indeed. So...
Now, it's fair to say that we weren't necessarily expecting to see a flapjack maker here at the London Boat Show. So would you like to just share with us and the listener how that's manifested and why you found yourself here?
Well, we have a lot of sailors in particular who have... come to us very often asking for nutrition that you're looking for, that you can take with you, that will last a long time, and also provides that sustained release of energy. The lovely thing about oats is they really keep you going, they keep you full, and something like these will actually last a few weeks. So you can cut them into chunks and fit them into whatever sort of plan you like. But of course, because we make everything by hand with very traditional and understandable ingredients, you know you're not eating anything funny, you're eating something well-made and made with love.
Graham?
I'm fascinated by how much the sailors of this world would actually buy from you. How much do they take from you when they're going on their holidays or on their sailing trips?
Well, it depends really on the sort of amounts you want, but we sell these big postal boxes. So we send them straight out anywhere in the UK and you get six great big slabs of flapjack for 20 quid, and that's very, very common, particularly for the sailors, because, you know, a thing like that will keep you going for as long as you want to be on the water, really.
Just one box.
Well, you can have as many as you like. I mean, often we have...
Depends on the size of the boat, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We do have a few particularly returning customers, and we send them out on a, you know, a couple of weekly basis.
Go on, Ed.
So when I think of flapjack,
yep,
I think of this one here, which is the kind of basic edition. My mum used to make it when we were kids. It was normally half the depth and probably twice as burnt. Sorry, mum. But you've got another 18 different types here. So just talk us through some of the different colours and flavours.
Yes, of course. So as you say, yeah, we start with our traditional flapjack, which is just oats, golden syrup, butter and sugar. So really simple, as you say, something that you may have had before. And a lovely thing. We generally use that as the base for some of the others here. So our biggest sellers would be things like your Millionaires, which has a vanilla caramel fudge, milk chocolate on top of that. My favourites are things like your Frangipane on the cherry Bakewell there with a layer of cherry and toasted almonds. We've got a seasonal one, so we've changed them around. So, you know, things like the Banoffee at the moment is one of the ones that we have in. So it's a layer of toffee fudge with banana running through the base, yogurt on top. The apple and blackcurrant's a lovely thing as well.
That was one that caught my eye, I must admit. I'm thinking about our Midrick drivers who weren't able to actually make it for this one of you now. For both Graham and Ed, who've been doing fantastic duty today, is there a possibility of us tasting for them, do you think?
I'm sure we can work something out for you, absolutely.
So what would you recommend for a hard-working television and film director such as Graham here in terms of keeping his flapjack thing? What's the line there?
Well, what do we think? Well, my favourites are between... Yeah, I love the apple and blackcurrant. Cherry Bakewell's always my sort of thing. I love a bit of fruit and seed, but it depends on the sort of thing you like. Why don't you point and I'll
Graham,
tell
you. I'd
love to try a bit of the apple and blackcurrant.
Yeah.
This is good. And Ed, your thoughts?
Do you know what? I will try a little bit of the same one, I think.
Yeah. So it's two for apple and blackcurrant, which is good for this. So I'll get the camera out and hopefully get prepared. A reminder, of course, that you're listening to Siren Radio on location. You can also go to www.flapjackery.co.uk. That's flapjackery.co.uk. We're now going to get that initial sort of response now as we're working through this, Ollie. So he's talking through this. So, Graham, your thoughts?
Soft. It's fabulous.
Soft and fabulous from Graham. And has it beaten your mum's flapjack?
Oh, it may have. Yes. It may have, yeah.
It's a win-win situation, Ollie, so that's great. And a reminder again, that web address, which presumably fully online, flapjackery.co.uk.
That's right, yes, wonderful. Yeah, we can do postal boxes as well anywhere in the UK, and they make for lovely gifts as well.
We have almost reached the end of our coverage of the 2018 London Boat Show. Ed, you succeeded in finding some water here. That sound is not some kind of lavatorial system that's sorting out the drains. It is indeed the sound of a lock, I believe it's referred to, because right at the far end of the hall, right at the other end from the helicopter, we found some inland waterways material.
Yes, that's the authentic sound of a leaking lock, like many of them are. Because as you can see, the lock gates don't come quite together. But actually, the other side of this, we've got two narrow boats and then some narrow boat builders further back. So we'll go and have a look at those.
Now, I seem to recall, Graham, in your directorial career, you once directed, was it Boone or Stay Lucky or something that actually had
those? Juliet Bravo on a narrow boat.
Juliet Bravo on a narrow boat.
Juliet Bravo in Austin Maestro. Those were the days, weren't they?
Yes. But on a narrow boat, it's a good thing for robbers to and thieves to use the inland waterways and canals, etc., because you can get lost on those and nobody will know where you are. And that's what the story I did was about in the 1980s.
Which hopefully one day will be released on DVD.
I doubt it.
We'll just have to wait and see. Hopefully the BBC haven't actually trashed the original lines and we can actually get some... No, surely not.
Yes.
Put the message out now. Seek out the Juliet Bravo thing. It's come to the time, though, chaps, where unless we get any startlingly wonderful final thoughts, we need to ask for your highlights of the boat show. So, Graham, what has been your highlight of the experience that we've had over the last few hours here?
Well, the highlight, to me, it seems busier than last year, but that, at the same time, I mean, we came on the same day, I think. And
it was the first day last year as well.
And it was the first day. And the atmosphere here is not fantastic. To me, it's
like a midweek London kind of. Well, we've seen that. Show us something more.
It is. It's also my opinion is until now, until we've seen the narrowboats, it's not for the little man who just wants to potter around in a boat on the Thames or down by the coast, etc. This is more for your serious-minded, upmarket professional. And that's a shame because many, many people love boating and sailing and whatever. And it doesn't cater for that little man or little woman.
Well, Ed, obviously proudly wearing your lanyard with British Marine stamped upon it and, of course, the rest of the press passed. What have your favourite bits been from this? I think your third boat show or possibly fourth?
Definitely the flapjack plus the young couple we met who do the boat cleaning products. So I've got some good Christmas present ideas. And I still think we can have a look at these narrowboats. I think this might be the saving grace.
I give heads up to Susie, of course, doing fantastic stuff there, the helicopter, a whole heap of other good things. Graham, you had something to add?
I didn't specifically point out the various people we've met who were all charming and all pleased to tell us about their things. The flapjack I found odd, loved it, and I can understand that people who are going away for a long time, whether they're seafaring or it's going climbing mountains, that nutritional... delight that we ate was would look after you and sustain.
It's not the food and drink fair, is it?
It's an odd thing to have the boat show. However,
own, but still, Ollie managed to cope very favourably with that. And of course, let's not forget who we actually launched with of course, their wonderful clothing from the joys of Kenya, Koi Clothing.
Yes, I thought that they're very stylish. I would love to go back and buy one of their jackets. I might do that.
So up again for the next location report and outside broadcast then, Graham?
Yes, because they're always interesting. You learn a lot.